gentlemen. Our first case for argument this morning is Killian against the Concert Health Plan. Mr. Shannon.
May it please the court, my name is David Shannon. I represent the appellant, James Killian. We raised three issues on appeal. I'd like to briefly address the third issue, statutory penalties. It's clear that the court made what could be described as a mathematical error. It forgot about the claim regarding the group policy. But we also contend that the district court misapprehended the facts. For example, the statement that James had at his disposal all the necessary information about Susan's plan. We don't believe that's accurate. He certainly did not have a summary plan description, your primary document that you rely on to learn about your benefits. They certainly didn't have a provider directory. So we're taking issue with not only the fact that they overlooked something, the court overlooked something there, but we believe that the penalty was small because the court thought that James had at his disposal all of the necessary information. With respect to the first issue, there's lack of evidence that Rush was a out-of-network provider. The panel opinion asks CHPIC and Royal Management to stipulate that on to that fact upon remand, but we don't believe that Royal Management can do that. They don't have any more information about the composition of the network than we do. You could ask them about Loyola or University of Chicago. They don't know what is or is out of network, even though they were the plan administrator.
What did the district court determine?
I'm sorry?
What did the district court determine?
The district court made no determination there. It noted the discrepancy, and it also noted that the defendants failed to explain the discrepancy, but they thought the discrepancy between PHCS and the select provider network was of no moment. So Royal Management is in the same position as Killian, unless they find these provider directories, the two or three that were purportedly delivered to Royal Management to cover 1,400 participants at 14 different locations. And you know, what are we talking about when we're talking about network directories? You've probably seen them before. This happens to be an exhibit from a deposition in this case. It's an Aetna plan for a small law firm. But these are very useful things to have when you're trying to find a provider who's in your network. This has it broken down by geographical location and specialty. This is what Royal Management and Concert failed to provide the participants under this plan. They also failed to provide a summary plan description, which is supposed to include a description of the composition of the network.
Let me take you here. Mr. Killian testified that he and his wife would have consulted with Dr. Bonomi regardless of whether Rush was an out-of-network provider. But did he ever testify that they would have gone forward with the surgery at Rush had they known Rush was out-of-network?
No, he certainly did not. And the call to the telephone calls to Concert were made after they got their second opinion from Dr. Bonomi. They had a relationship with Bonomi. He's Dr. Bonomi. He's the doctor that treated their daughter for cancer. It didn't turn out good, but apparently they had a great deal of confidence in him. They got their second opinion. Before they were getting treatment, they called Concert twice and got no information. Concert knew where they were. There was a little problem regarding the name. St. Luke's, and there's a history there, St. Luke's merged with Presbyterian. It became Press St. Luke's, and then it merged with Rush.
Could I just interrupt you for a second? Because it seems to me when they first, when Mr. Killian first calls and the person at the other end of the line says, you know, we don't know anything about St. Luke's, suppose the person had then gone on to say, and therefore you don't have an in-network provider. Is it that second sentence that's missing?
Oh, yes. If they had said that, I think it's possible Mr. Killian had said, well, where is a network provider? But what they put them in the position of doing here is inquiring on a provider-by-provider basis, exactly what you cannot do under the regulations adopted by the Department of Labor regarding summary plan descriptions. They require that participants be given the network directories. So, yes, we do not know what they would have done. It's conceivable they would have gone to University of Chicago or Loyola or something. They've all got excellent treaters for cancer.
Well, wait a minute. It said, based on his testimony, this is with Killian, this is when he's called, and there's some confusion about St. Luke. But even on the first call, I'll just read it. I said that we are here for a second opinion, and she is going. They want to admit her because we already determined the tumor has to come off. Dr. Barnes stated if he didn't take the tumor off, she would be dead within 5 days. So that was my reason for the phone call, to tell them she was going to be admitted to the hospital. And then they would ask a further question. What prompted me to call? The fact that she was going to be admitted to the hospital and the fact that you had to call for pre-admission. And on the card, it says pre-admission or get a determination if this is a viable operation. Well, he said, what did you tell them that it was? He said it was going to be to get an operation for brain cancer. Now,
yes. That
was a fait accompli. He's just notifying for a pre-certification.
Well, I think there's two ways to read that.
Well, that's one. That's the way it reads. Now, you can say, well, maybe it should have been different. But it was already a determined decision that they're going to be an operation because she's going to be dead in 5 days if he doesn't operate.
Correct. They're going ahead with surgery. Where they are going ahead, it could have made a difference if somebody was on the ball at Concert when they're inquiring and at least told them, you are at an out-of-network facility. This is not something that had to be done immediately. In fact, I believe he testified the surgery actually occurred on the 9th. When the call was made, that was the 7th. 2 days later, and nobody at Concert, this is after they know that nobody has network directories or summary plan.
Affluent people,
Killian? They are not. Mr. Killian installs doors.
So the 80,000 could be a big deterrent. Let me ask you, the question what they would have done if they'd had all the information, isn't that something that if we reverse, wouldn't that happen?
No, that has not been determined.
That would be an issue for further proceedings.
Yes, I agree.
On this argument is just that he didn't get the information that he needed to make the choice.
Right? That's part of it, and we believe all we're asking for is a remand to see if Mr. Killian is eligible for appropriate equitable relief.
And getting back to this predetermination issue that Judge Mannion spoke about, I mean, part of the predetermination is who does it and what procedure is authorized. Isn't that right?
Well, that would be part of it.
No, pre-certification is to determine whether there is a medical necessity. It's right in the that's the purpose of the call. You're not calling for some facelift or something that is not a medical necessity. And
well,
when someone says he's going in for brain surgery, you don't need to say, gee, is that medically necessary? Obviously, that's not something somebody's going to do without a medical necessity. And that's why the pre-certification. It's not to go into a lot of other things.
Well, the card itself says benefit identification card to determine provider participation.
That's
call.
Correct.
That's the language.
In fact, in their attempt to distinguish Kenseth, I'm referring to their answer to a petition for rehearing. They claim, unlike Kenseth, there was never any encouragement to contact a phone line to determine benefits. Well, it's not an encouragement. It is a requirement. On page 4 of the certificate of insurance, it says you must, to confirm coverage, you must call the number listed on the back of your medical card. Actually, it's on the front of the medical card. That's why I think they might have a different network involved here. Maybe for the select network, it's on the back of the card. Certainly for the PHCS network, it's on the front of the card. What they do not tell them is read on 40 more pages through some fine print, and you'll see that we're not bound by anything, any promise or representation that an agent has made to you.
So it seems to me that the procedural posture of this case is important here, in that this is on summary judgment, right?
That's summary judgment, where the inferences are supposed to go Mr. Killian's way, and it seemed like they were all going the other way.
So any ambiguity in his confusion about which phone number he's calling or the purpose of the call has to go his way.
Yes, and I think that could be further developed below.
Mr. Shannon, does the plan say anything about what happens if a medical procedure cannot be done at a facility in-network? What rate is payable to the beneficiary at an out-of-network hospital under those circumstances?
I believe if you end up at an out-of-network facility with full knowledge that you're going there, there's something called the maximum allowable fee.
Suppose you are there because there is no available treatment at a facility in-network. What does the plan say what rate applies under those circumstances?
I'm not sure. I haven't looked at that aspect of the plan. It's a very detailed plan. It runs on for many pages. But I can't answer that question. I'm not sure. One of the things we would be looking for when this goes back under the issue of whether Rush is even in network, there's something I believe we're going to be looking for called a PHCS preferred facility agreement. That would be between Rush and PHCS. There's also something called a subscriber service agreement. That would be between Concert and PHCS. And those terms come out of Concert Health Insurance Plan versus Houston Northwest Partners. That's at 265 FRD 319. I would also point out, under this subscriber services agreement between Concert and PHCS, the network, one of the things that Concert is supposed to do in there in order to promote the network is to distribute provider directories so they drum up business for the network. And you can see that. It's a PHCS network case is HCA Health Services versus Employees Health Insurance Company, 240 F3rd at 982.
So let me just follow up on one other thing. And this gets to the moment of the phone call and whether Mr. Killian might have taken different action with regard to the surgery. At least in this case, this is all happening in Chicago, right? It's Rush.
Correct.
So there's no evidence that she couldn't have been moved to Loyola or Northwestern or some other facility.
Oh, correct. Or whatever the thing, what's up in Minnesota, the... Yes, and I don't know
Mayo.
How far this network.
Mayo.
I'm sorry.
Mayo.
Yeah, Mayo. Thank you. He could have gone to the Mayo Clinic, perhaps. I have no idea whether the Mayo Clinic is in or out of network, or if this network is simply limited to Cook County or Chicago hospitals.
Does the record show that? I mean, this lady was apparently in pretty bad shape.
Things happened pretty rapidly. I believe she was diagnosed in April and died in August. So, yes, things were moving along.
As the record now stands on summary judgment, we don't know to what degree she was capable of being moved, do we?
Correct.
Why wasn't that record developed before the summary judgment?
We had certain issues that were before the court on summary judgment. This is three opportunities on summary judgment. This is the second summary judgment motion by
Discovery. Concert. Discovery was closed?
You know what? Discovery here, there was extensive discovery done in this case, and discovery was closed, even though this is ostensibly an arbitrary and capricious standard of review, which, of course, you're limited to the administrative record. As I stand here today, I couldn't tell you what the administrative record here is because I've never seen it.
Was discovery closed without ever determining definitively whether Rush was in or out of network?
That's correct. We made efforts to locate.
Amazing to me, frankly.
We made efforts to determine that, and we came up dry. You would have to have, I think now what we know, we need these things called the PHCS Preferred Facility Agreement, if there is one between Rush and Concert. We'd also have to see this subscriber services agreement.
Right. It's clear, counsel, that a great deal is missing. And the question is, why wasn't that obtained before the summary judgment motions? And I understand there were a series of them, but discovery was closed. It's your burden. And
yes, well,
we tried
to.
You didn't develop the record adequately to carry your burden. And frankly, the whole issue of these two phone calls was an afterthought. You placed most of your fiduciary duty on the failure to provide the SPD?
Well, Judge, the two phone calls we've mentioned in the they were mentioned in the plaintiff's complaint.
They were mentioned, but there was no emphasis placed on them in the lower court or in the briefing before the panel.
I have to disagree. In the lower court, if you look at our local rule 56.1 statements, we repeatedly refer to the phone calls. We repeatedly refer to the discrepancy between PHCS and Select Provider Network. It's also in the Mr. Killian's affidavit. This was also a big deal in the first motion for summary judgment, where the court even discussed the telephone calls.
On your briefing in this court, the discussion of the phone calls was a paragraph, maybe?
It wasn't a long brief. We got right to the point, I think. We didn't belabor the point. And as far as the record being closed, discovery being closed, yes, we made every effort to determine who was in or out of network, but there is nothing available.
Did you make any effort to determine whether there is such a thing as a network that's called Select?
We did. We did extensive discovery in this case.
And what did you find out?
We don't. As far as I know, there is something out there called Select Provider Network. If you Google
that
term.
What do you base that on?
I'm sorry?
What do you base that on?
The fact that it is repeatedly referred to throughout the certificate of insurance, and the fact that that network, here's part of it, they say if you want to check our network, look at the back of your card. PHCS Network has the provider confirmation number on the front of the card. There's also, supposedly this information was available online. In fact, in the answer to the petition for rehearing, footnote 3, it was undisputed, and that's underlined in bold, that the network was available online to Mrs. Killian. That is not correct, and I would refer the court to the local rule 56.1 statement, and this is how you raise these issues. You put them in your local rule statement. Here's the response, Killian's response. CHPIC has not established a foundation for its assertion that a list of network providers was available online, nor has CHPIC established what the online lists of provider consists of, and I provided two case citations there to help them out. But there is nothing in the record as to what was available online.
Killian testify that he tried twice to find out and the system didn't work?
The system didn't work. They basically didn't tell him. You would think the first words out of your mouth is, what do you mean you're going for surgery? Don't you know that Rush is out of your network? Mm-hmm. No, and if he didn't phrase it carefully enough, I believe they had the affirmative duty to come forward with that basic, essential information.
It says that he called. He said he. He said he called because of what was on the card, and the card talks about it said non-emergency admissions must be pre-certified no less than 7 days prior to admission. Obviously, this was not within 7 days, but it says specifically pre-certification. It's a determination that the proposed service is medically necessary. Now, when someone says it's scheduled to go, he's being admitted. It's not a question of, well, we're thinking about admitting. He's She is being admitted because the doctor has said that she's going to die in 5 days if she doesn't have an operation. And that's why he's telling him that, and there's not any second question when someone says they're going to have brain surgery, whether it's medically necessary. And all I'm saying is that was the purpose of the call. Now, you're saying they should have injected a lot of other things. You know that he was going to Dr. Bonomi no matter what.
Is that right? They were going to Dr. Bonomi no matter what for a second opinion, which they had by the time that he initiated the first phone call.
The second opinion they had?
They had his second opinion. He said that tumor's got to go.
It was after they talked to Dr. Barnes. They met with Dr. Barnes, and he looked at all the documents they brought over from the other hospital and said, she'll die in 5 days if she doesn't have an operation.
And then they get a second opinion from Dr. Bonomi, which they were getting no matter what. We're not claiming any liability.
What did Bonomi say?
He said that tumor's got to come out. And that's when they called Concert. And then at the very top of the card, before you get into emergency admissions and whatnot, to determine provider participation. That's he called, and I think the court can infer that the call was made to determine provider participation.
I have a different type of question. I don't understand what reference to fiduciary duties does in a case like this.
Well, I think it gets
us... Breach of contract case. I don't see what...
Well, I think the Supreme
the fiduciary
Court...
Fiduciary obligations in ERISA in terms of management of assets.
Well, Judge, that's all what AMERA is about.
Mm-hmm. What does it mean concretely? How does thinking of this in fiduciary terms differ from thinking about it just as a breach of contract?
Well, I suppose if you think about it as a breach of contract, you can say that Concert and Royal Management breached Concert breached its contract. It says...
No, I understand. You have a perfectly good breach of contract case, I think. I just don't understand what is added. You're saying it because, of course, it's in the cases. But I don't understand whether... And what bothers me about it is it creates a kind of double standard. If there's anything to the fiduciary dimension. I don't think there is. But if there were, it would have a double standard. So if you happen to have health insurance under an ERISA, you know, employer provided, then you have fiduciary rights. Whereas if you have an ordinary insurance policy, you don't have it.
Correct. Where you've got an ordinary insurance policy and then you can march into state court and get all sorts of extra contractual remedies and penalties and whatnot. We did not have a state court breach of contract claim that would have been preempted by ERISA, so we're in federal court with a claim under ERISA. And I suppose a claim for A1B benefits, it looks a lot like a breach of contract claim.
Bannon, does the breach of fiduciary duty theory here let you take into account the fact that an insurer may well be dealing with a customer in need and in crisis?
I think you certainly can, and there was no doubt, and I think that was brought out a lot in the opinion regarding statutory penalties, that these people were under a lot of pressure at the time.
I think we want every health insured. You see, I don't think you want to have a situation in which employer health insurers have these duties to people who are, you know, in a desperate situation. But ordinary insurers don't. That's what I find troubling.
That's the scheme that Congress set up with ERISA.
Well, I wonder if they were thinking about that or whether when they talk about fiduciary obligations, what they really have in mind is prudent management of assets. After all, the pension fund is the basic ERISA plan, and these welfare benefit plans
right. AMERA was a pension.
You're suggesting that the state insurance regulations might be some sort of substitute for the ERISA protection. So maybe there's not the dual standard at the end of the day.
Well, you've got the state insurance regulation that provides for no Firestone language, basically, on any new policies. They're intruding in there a bit, and I think that's being held up now and then. And that's for the protection of these participants and beneficiaries.
And more generally, a lot of states recognize that insurers do, in fact, owe their insureds fiduciary duties, do they not?
Oh, no question.
But Dave, could I have just a further question? And that is on the obligation of Mr. Killian. He has said in his deposition that they hadn't called in a while about the bills. What legal obligation is there for him to pay this $80,000?
The lion's share of the $80,000 is Rush. Rush has been in constant contact with me.
I understand
continues.
Who it's owed to, but why does he owe it?
Oh, that would be under the Illinois Family Expense Statute. He would be liable as a surviving spouse for his wife's medical bills. I believe that does not have a limitations period. I mean, this is $80,000, and we're into our sixth year of litigation here. Are these claims stale? I don't believe so. I think you'd be under the five-year limitation period under the Family Expense Act. Unless Mr. Killian signed something at the hospital, which is entirely possible.
That's what I wanted to know. Did he? When the estate was closed, that's when he moved to be substituted as the plaintiff.
Right.
As opposed to the estate. And I'm trying to figure out, he called that an asset.
Well, no.
Is there some liability he took on at the same time?
The asset was the claim in this proceeding. Yeah. The only reason we opened an estate was because Concert refused to deal with Mr. Killian in his personal capacity, even though this plan provides that benefits could be paid to a spouse at their discretion. I think it was just vindictive. It took time and money on Mr. Killian's behalf. The only reason an estate was open was because of this claim.
This was her only asset, right?
That's correct. And now he's the owner of this asset. I think I'm into my rebuttal time.
Just tell me if interest has accrued.
Has interest accrued? I don't know
Okay. Whether
interest is accruing.
Thank you, Mr. Shannon. Farber.
Good morning. May it please the Court. My name is Paul Farber. I represent Concert Health Plan Insurance Company. Plaintiff has indicated that they were here for 3 points, when in fact we are here because plaintiff argued in the brief that there is a conflict with the Kenseth matter in the Seventh Circuit. We believe that the facts and the reasoning in that case, number one, the facts are distinguishable from the facts in our case, and the reasoning from Kenseth actually supports everything that occurred in our favor.
Benefit identification clause is very confusing. And then whoever he talked to on the phone, they seemed uninformed, unhelpful.
Well, Your Honor, the situation is that if you look at the document 252, which is the identification card you're referring to, and this goes back to Kenseth specifically, the number that he called was a customer service number, and we know that because...
Well, both numbers.
Yeah.
Yep. And isn't there an inference that both numbers ring to the same place?
Well, both numbers, if you look, there's a utilization review number below that. It's listed...
That's another confusing thing.
Well...
I think it's terribly confusing.
The issue is...
You're dealing with ordinary people, right? You're not
Well, what we learned from Kenseth and
May I tell you what we learned from Kenseth since I have a very...
Excuse me, just one at a time, please.
Sorry. Go ahead.
No,
Judge Rover.
I have a very special interest in Kenseth, as you may be aware. Kenseth. Once an ERISA beneficiary has requested information from an ERISA who is aware of the beneficiary's status and situation, the fiduciary has an obligation to convey complete and accurate information material to the beneficiary's circumstance, even if that requires conveying information about which the beneficiary did not specifically inquire. quoting Gregg versus Transportation Workers of America International, and that's a Sixth Circuit case. And the panel majority in Kenseth recognized that this is a broad duty of disclosure. How you can think Kenseth supports you is really quite beyond me.
Well, Your Honor, in Kenseth, the facts are easily distinguishable because, as the record in this case shows, the call, the undisputed record shows, that the call is being made for coverage determination, a determination
of pre-approval. Why is that the undisputed inference? This is summary judgment. It seems to me he places the call to the number for provider participation. He says, I'm at St. Luke's. The woman flippantly says, never heard of it, you know, which might mean she should have also said, if I haven't heard of it, you're not in the network, which in this instance may or may not have been correct. But I don't know why you draw the inference that because she calls one or the other of these numbers that it's for a certain purpose. And as Judge Tinder points out, when he calls the second number, the person who answers the phone apparently knows about the first call.
It seems to
be all one thing.
To answer your question, his testimony, which I believe Judge Mannion just read from the record, indicates that the purpose of the call was for pre-approval.
I do not find that as clear, perhaps, as Judge Mannion does. I think it – and what does pre-approval mean? If pre-approval means, you know, if you go ahead with this location, you're going to be on the hook for the full surgical cost. Why don't you look into having an ambulance take her over to, you know, UIC or Loyola or someplace? We just don't know what he would have done.
Well,
and it might have even triggered the plan's emergency provisions. We don't know that either, because if the proper response had taken place and they'd gone off on the emergency direction, the plan does cover emergency care at out-of-network places.
Correct. But what happened is the call is being made for approval, or in other words, as Judge Mannion said.
This is this card business. You know, you may only make a call like that for approval, but what if you're a husband who's desperate to get his very ill wife some care? Is he really understanding that when it's pre-certification, it's approval, and when it's provider participation, it's something else? I'm not sure.
That fact scenario you gave is not what the facts are in this case, however. In this case, the reason they were at the hospital, Your Honor, was because an appointment was made 3 days before they arrived.
For the second opinion. Most hospitals have physician office areas, and then they have operating rooms and other service areas. So if Mr. Shannon is waiving any right he may have to reimbursement for the office visit for the second opinion, and we're really just focusing on the surgery, I don't find it too probative one way or the other that they knew they were going to go get the second opinion.
Well, the reason why it's relevant, Your Honor, is because the probative value is that call, the second opinion, was also an out-of-network person.
Right,
so
and suppose he was fine with paying whatever it was, the $120 for an office visit.
Well, if you're asking me in the scenario that you gave, the fact scenario of someone desperate at being brought to a hospital in an ambulance, that goes further into the plan issue and whether it's that goes to more of a 502A1B issue.
I didn't say that she was brought to the hospital. I was saying if they had told him when he made the first or the second call that Rush was out of network, he could have made a rational decision whether to seek emergency authorization or whether she could, in fact, be moved to another place, whether she could just walk out the door with him and go to another place. There are all kinds of options on the table, unexplored so far.
Well, the record indicates that the call was being made while he was at the hospital during or just before the procedure was occurring. So there isn't really, if we take that scenario to its logical furtherance, what would they have done? If we know from the fact scenario here, which is also...
What did they know? What did these operators know?
Well, the operators that he called are making a determination as to coverage or medical necessity. That's the number he called. They're not in a position... I'm sorry.
Because I'm having a problem here on this medically necessary. That's what the pre-certification is. Now, that Maybe I'm just reading the facts as they are laid out here, because he said categorically she is being admitted because she needs this brain surgery operation, and he's calling because the card said to, and as I read it, it's because of a pre-certification, and pre-certification determination is whether it is medically necessary. It's not anything about coverage and anything else. Now, if you're going in some other direction, then maybe I'm just wrong.
Well, the number he's calling is Concert Health Plan Insurance Company.
He calls two numbers, though, right? He calls the dedicated provider participation line first, and then, second, he calls the utilization review line.
The participation number that is being called is PHCS Network. That's the network that Ms. Killian selected as her network. That network is not...
The number on Mrs. Killian's insurance card was designated for network provider inquiries.
If you look
inquiries.
At
network provider inquiries.
Right.
And what else could the man have done?
Well, we know that that number was not called in this situation.
Well, we can't figure this out. How
Counsel,
you
know, let me try to get at this from a
okay.
different angle here, from way over on your left. From your perspective, what would Mr. Killian have had to do in order to trigger a response from Concert that would be legally binding that he could rely upon?
If before the appointment was made, there was
the surgery.
The surgery was not an emergency surgery because there was an appointment made, according to the record, at least 3 days before the surgery. So we're not talking about an emergency situation. At least
do you
under
think
the
there was an appointment made for the surgery 3 days before or an appointment made for the consult?
The reason they were at the hospital, that appointment was made 3 days before, according to the testimony in the record.
For the consult?
The consult was before that for the second opinion. These are all scenarios that occur after the decision was made.
Right. The surgery is 2 days after the phone calls.
That's correct.
Your policy calls, if I recall correctly, for a 7-day advance notice of non-emergency surgery. If the doctor's opinion is she's going to be dead within 5 days, I think we're at least in middle ground here, right? Okay. But let me go back to my question. In a phone call, what would Killian have had to ask or say on which phone line in order, in your view, to trigger an obligation to provide him accurate information about whether the surgery would be in-network or out-of-network?
He could have done anything.
Tell me one scenario.
Is this going to be covered in-network or out-of-network?
Okay.
Is Rush Hospital, St. Luke's, whatever you want to call it, is this within the network of this provider?
Would he have been entitled to rely upon the response, given
yes.
all of the disclaimers you've got in the certificate of insurance?
Well, yes, he would be authorized because at that point what we have triggered is the language that was previously discussed where they have an affirmative duty to give information when it could be to the detriment of the person making the call.
Okay,
now, at that point,
duty,
it's clearly triggered.
An affirmative duty. Okay. If he asks the right question, you agree that he's entitled to get accurate information. What if he doesn't ask exactly the right question?
I think even if he doesn't ask the exact question, he's still entitled to proper information, proper and complete information. That's not what we're saying here. We're not saying, oh, we should have, we don't have to affirmatively give that information. The standard that was previously discussed is the person on the other line, the fiduciary, if you will, has to know or should know what is being asked of them. What is the predicament that is in place now? That's when the breach of fiduciary comes into play. Now, if we take the calls for value and as they were described by Mr. Killian in his deposition, he is testifying that he's calling to determine, pre-approval.
Just trying to comply with the requirements, whatever they are. So.
Question, what would the answer have been?
I'm sorry?
What would the answer have been if he had asked the precise question, is this in the network or out of the network? If it's out of the network, is it covered anyway? What would the answer have been?
Well, in this situation, the call is being made.
Would you answer my question? What would the answer have been?
The answer would have been it's out of network. But
how do you know?
Well, that's the thing.
Do people know anything, these operators?
The people, the reason.
My question is, do we know that this rather flippant operator would know one way, that would say one thing or another, would just say, oh, go ahead.
Well, what you're asking, Your Honor.
Would you answer my question? Do we know or do we not know?
It depends on which call.
Would you answer my question?
If
they know what the question was, is it in the network, out of the network? If it's out of the network, is it covered anyway? Now, is there evidence as to what this operator would have said?
The call that was made. I really, Your Honor, I think that the problem is that what do they know? If you're asking me what they know, it depends on what information they're given. We don't
I just told you what information they're given.
The person on the other line would then have to ask a series of follow-up calls to determine what the plan is. They don't memorize plans, 60 pages of plans for over 1,000 employees.
We went through all this in the district court.
Yes.
What did the district court say?
The district court determined that wasn't the question being posed.
Yes, but didn't he said something about not being in network?
Yeah, it would have been out in network.
He's asking. See, okay. The question here is
what these people actually know and how they answer questions like that. They don't seem to be well-informed people.
I disagree, Your Honor.
What are they trained to do in this situation? Abstract the question.
I'm sorry?
Let's abstract the question. What are your operators trained to do in this situation?
The call that is being made, they're trained to make a determination as to approval, certification, medical necessity, anything regarding in other words, they make the determination, as previously discussed, this is a brain surgery, not plastic surgery.
What about few calls on the dedicated provider participation line, though? Why are they going into all of that there?
The participation line, we know that wasn't called in this case because that is not...
Well, he testifies that he called the participation line. That's where he said, I'm at St. Luke's, and that's where she says... You know, we don't have anything called St. Luke's, and he's confused because he's thinking of the old name of the place, as we all know. But he calls that line. You can't, on summary judgment, assume the facts favorably to you. There is very solid testimony in this record that he calls the provider participation line.
If he called the provider participation line, and we're going to take that assumption to its logical...
You have to.
Okay, and that's fine. All I was doing was correcting... explaining why.
And it's beyond just that, because he says, the representative says she's not aware and tells him to call back later and go ahead with whatever had to be done. So if you were told to call back later and you don't get satisfaction from that first operator, it's also logical to call customer service.
Absolutely.
Because you didn't get good customer service.
Absolutely. But what distinction I'm making here, and it's a very logical one in my opinion, is that the call is being made after the decision was made to go to this person. In other words, they are already at the hospital when the surgery is about to occur. In other words, the decision to go out of network or in network has been already made.
Yeah, but the decision might be different if they find out they're out of network. But they're there for the second opinion. He finds out, you know, you got to do this, surgery. He makes the call. He finds out. He's trying to find out if it's provided. They could have gone somewhere else if they'd gotten the answer.
And you're assuming they couldn't have rolled around the room.
Oh, you poor soul. The first telephone call that Mr. Killian made was to the number that was specifically designated for network provider inquiries. Why isn't that fact alone not enough to place Concert's representative on notice that he needed to know about Russia's status, even if Mr. Killian never actually asked that question, and we go back to Kensev. Given the telephone number that Mr. Killian called in the first instance, shouldn't the Concert representative have at least said to him, asked him, are you calling to determine whether this hospital is in the network of approved providers?
If I can answer that question in two parts. Number one, the call for the network is not, And I should answer this because there's a second part, so let me, if I could finish it, I can answer both judges' questions. The first part is that network goes to, if you look at the card, which is document 252, the network is PHCS. That is her card, her network. That number, we know, well, even if it was to Concert, that's the network number. PHCS is an outside source network.
And how is they
that,
supposed
we
to
know that,
that
that wasn't called because, as he said in his testimony, and Johnny Anthony testified in document 247, that the call was being made for certification. Now, going to the second...
You've got a dispute of fact on that.
Well, the dispute of fact can be answered in stipulation, but whether we go to that, whether we have to even go to that, goes to the second part of what I was going to say, which is they have already, Concert's not in the business of telling people where they can and can't go. They make their decisions. The only thing that Concert decides is to what extent the payment is made. What Concert decides is what is covered.
That makes absolutely no sense.
Why do you think he was calling?
Well, according to his testimony, and according to Johnny Anthony's testimony, which is both undisputed, he's calling because he needs to approval of the procedure.
So he wants to make
sure. He's not calling the insurance company so that they will decide whether she needs an operation. The only reason you call an insurance company is to see whether you're covered.
And this was covered, Your Honor. That's what we're having a question, and what I want to point out is the factual distinctions between Kenseth. And
even though there's no reimbursement? I don't understand.
There is reimbursement. Concert did pay, but they paid at the out-of-network rate. In other words, there are these bills that are racked up because the network that was chosen by Ms. Killian was open access.
How much did they pay?
I am not sure. It was a couple of thousands of dollars, but not 80,000.
Somewhere around 13,000.
13, yeah, something around that amount. Right. I apologize. But essentially, the people that are receiving these calls don't know what the hospital charges out of network because they're not part of this network.
Do they have a database of who's in network and who's not?
I'm sorry?
Do the operators have access to a database that tells them which hospitals are in network, which providers are in network, and which are not?
If their questions are asked about network, they can access it and send them to the right people that can answer that question. I'm sorry?
How long does it take to answer the question?
About the network? I think during the call, within minutes, if they have the information that's given to them, which is on the card.
Who are these operators employed by?
The operators of the customer service are employed by Concert Health. The operators at the network service, the people calling about the network, are employed by PHCS, what counsel indicated, private healthcare systems. Separate location, separate entity, and that network was the one that was selected.
There's two phone numbers. One goes one place, the other phone call goes another place.
Yes, but even when you call the Concert number, the one that we have control over, we can send them to the network and get that information.
Are they contract employees, or are you?
It's a separate contract with a subscriber agreement, as counsel indicated. It's private health care.
As both operators?
I'm sorry.
Do you employ these people, or are they contracted?
The customer service, where they call for coverage questions, medical necessity, and whatnot, that's Concert Health Plan Insurance Company. If the network is a separate network, depending on which network is selected by the provider.
Of course, there's nothing here about Concert and the distinction between what you're supposed to get if you call customer service and it's Concert versus what you're supposed to get with PHCS, because under PHCS is the benefit to determine provider participation. So how can an ordinary person know? You know, there are all these differences. It's not spelled out on the card. You know, what's at the top says to determine provider. He testified he called. That person didn't know. They said to call back. I mean,
An ordinary person is expected to read their plan documents. And in this case...
But she never got an SPD.
I'm sorry?
Counsel, let me follow up on a slightly different angle. With these operators, whether they're working for you or are working for an independent contractor through a contract, if they make a mistake about telling an insured participant whether a doctor or hospital is in network or out of network, do you stand behind their mistakes?
No.
Let me ask you about
Let
that.
Let me tell you why.
Let, hang on a second. Let me ask you about that. And the reason I'm asking is because, as near as I can tell, the list of covered providers is not available to the patients. They are told they must check every time because the list is subject to change. They have to rely on your operators. So why can they not legally rely on what your operators tell them?
Well, if you're asking me about the operators at Concert Health Plan Insurance.
Both.
Okay, well, then that's a different question. Then yes, we would, because PHCS is in the business of determining whose network, who's in and out of network, or whoever the provider.
If you make a mistake, you'll stand behind them.
Absolutely. Because we have no, we have to. It's a part of our agreement. But here's what the distinction is, and what we've learned from the other cases is when the plan documents are clear, if there is a mistake, there is no liability to the, in this case, insurance carrier or the plan administrator. And in this case, the plan documents are clear.
Have you ever produced the SPD in this case? The district court finds that you didn't.
No. Actually, I just the interpretation that counsel mentioned in his brief is just not accurate. We had produced the plan administrator produced the summary plan description. The criticism
the district court says the documents Susan received, quote, plainly do not meet ERISA's SPD standards, period, close quote.
The criticisms of the summary plan description had to do with deficiencies in the plan, nothing to do with whether there was unclarity into benefits.
Be that as it may, you have never produced a single document that really counts as a summary plan description, have you?
We are not the plan administrator, but the,
well,
to our
anybody on the other side of the case from Mr. Killian has never produced any document that is actually a summary plan description, which you rightly say is a crucial document in these welfare plans so that people know where to start and find out what they have and what they don't have.
My time is up. Can I answer your...
Not quite up.
Oh, I'm sorry. There was a summary plan description provided. The district court found that there were deficiencies in the summary plan description.
Well, there was a document provided he didn't think was a, he or she didn't think it was a summary plan description because it was deficient.
Right. But the deficiencies had nothing to do with what we have here in these two
Why
calls.
Why does that matter? There isn't an adequate summary plan description.
What the
Period.
Courts have... What we... What... My interpretation of Kensett is if the plan documents are clear on the benefits, then that, then what is told, whether it's mistaken or not, as the judge said, is of no consequence. Now, in this situation, we have clear documents that describe benefits.
Clear? I can't believe you've been in this courtroom for the last hour, and the word clear can come out of your mouth.
Well, if you look at the plan description and the language, and Justice Ripple has also indicated in his dissent, that language is there, and it says clearly when you go out of network, you are going to be responsible for out-of-network costs. To that extent, it's clear, and it's clear that they're supposed to make an inquiry into whether someone's in or out of network.
Thank you, Mr. Farber.
Wait a minute. No, I want to add one more thing. I know it's a lot of people talking, but before this happened, she had a primary caregiver, made a determination that she's bad, and they went and got x-rays. Then she spent 5 days in the hospital somewhere else.
Yes.
I assume all this rigmarole went through at that point about, pre-certification, predetermination before going in that hospital?
Correct. They were aware of their network. We know that because those were all
in-network.
So they
went through all of this. This was not something that they just initially encountered. I just want to bring that up.
Yes.
Because obviously I'm sitting here trying to make a case that you guys haven't made, but that's different.
The network, all the... And can I respond to that really briefly?
You can always answer a question posed by the judge.
The difference in Kensett was a coverage issue, and in this case, as Justice Mannion has indicated, we have covered all the bills to the extent available under the plan, which is what plaintiff is alleging for relief in this case that we do. All of this has been paid. The extent that it's been paid out of network or what is left on the bill are questions of network or out of network, and those are simply Concert's not in the business of telling people who they can go to see. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Ms. Thorne.
Good morning, Your Honors.
I represent the Royal Management Defendants. This is a good time for me to tag team in, as Mr. Farbar was getting a lot of questions about the plan documents. I only reserved 5 minutes because on the face of the petition for rehearing, plaintiff did not appear to raise any claims or try to preserve any claims against the Royal Defendants. Rather, as you all have been discussing at length, the issues he raised deal with the two phone calls with Concert. Out of an abundance of caution, though, I do want to clarify a couple of things, since Mr. Shannon opened his argument by saying that they were raising claims with respect to the penalty issue. Recall that the panel below did remand on the penalty issue because they found that the district court had made a mathematical error. No party has appealed that decision. There is no mention at all in the petition for rehearing about the penalty.
But the appeal goes to the full court. As you know, the briefs we have before us are the briefs that the panel considered. So the fact that this wasn't reiterated in the petition for rehearing doesn't mean that the issue is not before this court. We're just now sitting as a full court as opposed to through a panel.
And to be clear, we do not disagree that there was a mathematical error made by the district court, which is why we have not done anything on that issue. But there seems to be a very important misapprehension by the plaintiff about the difference between the penalty claim, which is only triggered upon a failure to provide a summary plan description after a written request. Section 502C of ERISA does not kick in until there's been a written request. The judge found here that there was a delay in providing those documents, and because the documents did not meet the technical requirements of a summary plan description, that a minor penalty was in order.
But bottom line, Mrs. Killian was never given a document listing all of the in-network providers. So calling the toll-free number for network inquiries was the primary way for her to determine whether Rush was in-network or out-of-network. Is that not correct?
I would agree, although, again, that is with respect to Concert, and I only represent Royal. I simply wanted to clarify that Mr. Shannon seems to be arguing that the deficient SPD had something to do with the lack of a network list. He's bootstrapping the failure to have a technically correct SPD with this network list. And in his briefs, he suggests that the regulations require there have been given a hard copy network list.
Or some rational. I think he is making a reasonable point to say that the SPD issue is related to this broader issue. These are all ways that ERISA tries to equip plan participants to ascertain their rights, to make their decisions with full awareness of their financial exposure. And I'm also concerned that the district court seems to have forgotten altogether that there was a group policy claim on this statutory damages point. It seems to me that there are a couple of flaws, not just a single, quote, mathematical one.
Your Honor, again, I don't disagree, although I do disagree that with the procedural issue in the district court. The district court found that there was not a discussion of the group policy issue, and he found that the plaintiff had alleged that claim in his complaint, amended complaint, but the plaintiff never moved on that issue. We moved for summary judgment. The plaintiff didn't. And that's why we argued that there had been that claim had been waived by the plaintiff, because they didn't move for summary judgment on that
claim. Waive a claim by not moving for summary judgment on it?
They made the claim. They didn't put forth any evidence to support that claim, the group policy. We, in fact, put forth evidence that the group policy had been in their hands for quite some time. They ultimately were complaining because they didn't have a signed copy of a group policy. But the issue that we raised in the lower court was that they had not properly put on evidence of the group policy. But, again, we don't contest what the panel below decided to do with respect to the group policy. They said remanded on that issue. We agree. I do want to be clear, however, to address the network issue. The plan documents, albeit deficient, were not deficient with respect to the information about the network list.
the certificate of insurance, which is what was provided to Mrs. Killian, among other things, very specifically talks about in and out of network providers and what you need to do to make a determination about whether a particular provider is in or out of network.
What's the custom in the industry? That is, for example, at least in my experience, some insurance companies will provide written, mailed to the insured, the changes that occur with regard to the network people. You don't do that, I gather.
Well, Concert actually does that, or different entities does that for us. But to answer your question, the custom in the industry is, and as the document instructed Mrs. Killian, to have the network online available to them because providers come in and off that network all the time. That's why it's kept online so that people can...
Hospitals and physicians as well?
It's all network providers. So, yes, the answer to the question is yes, because physicians come on and off all the time.
All right. I can see that with physicians, but you change hospitals that quickly, too?
No, you're right. You're right, with respect to physicians. And that's why the network list is made available online, because it changes all the time.
Previous hospital on that network?
I apologize.
Your earlier hospital, I forget the name of it, the one that she went to for 5 days.
And what is the question, Your Honor? I'm
is sorry. That on in network?
Your Honor, my understanding is, and again, Royal is not the one who makes those determinations, but my understanding is that the hospital at which they were seeking the service was out of network.
Can we solve this mystery about whether there is such a network called Select?
Well, Your Honor, I think the panel got it correct. There is a subgroup, and again, this all I'm remiss to answer the question because it's Concert's panel network. There is a network, and then there is a subgroup within that network. Mr. Shannon, in all due respect, wants to make a lot about that, but that really had nothing to do with the decisions that they made. And the information in the documents that Mrs. Killian was provided told her exactly where to go. The website is on there, www.concert.com.
What if it doesn't work?
Pardon me?
What if it wasn't working, as Mr. Killian testified?
Then she can call the number. I agree. She can call the number.
And the object of evidence demonstrates that there was no call to the network line, the provider that would give information about whether the provider was in or out of network?
That is my understanding, Your Honor. But again, those are Concert's facts. You know, I'm looking at the facts with respect to the plan documents and what they said because that was Royal's obligation. And the only claim against Royal can be for breach of fiduciary duty with respect to a failure to provide those documents. And very importantly, Your Honor, you asked, those documents are extremely important to notifying the participants about their plans, their benefits, and their network providers. We totally agree. But there is a causation element to a breach of fiduciary duty claim that Mr. Killian has not met. He cannot prove that the lack of a written provider network to Mrs. Killian when she enrolled in this plan changed their decisions or caused the harm because the documents that she was provided told her exactly what to do.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Anything further, Mr. Shannon?
Judge, I have a few brief points that I'd like to make. One of them is this court has said many times that you're not pigs hunting for truffles. Neither are ERISA participants. They're supposed to be provided this information. Concert has stood here and said they will stand by the mistakes that their representatives make. And that's part of our agreement. Well, actually, the agreement says on page 44 of the Certificate of Insurance, no agent has authority to bind us by making any promise or representation. If I'm Concert's attorney, I would say we do not stand by them, and we're not going to stand by them because that's what's in the agreement. There's another thing about there's been many statements made about these operators. They didn't seem to be up to speed. Well, the other thing is, you know, they don't work on weekends. That's from OSF Healthcare versus Concert Health Plan Insurance Company, 822F2nd 809. If they're not there on weekends, I suspect they're not there in the middle of the night either. So don't get sick on the weekend, and don't get sick in the middle of the night.
Mr. Shannon, Judge Hamilton, a while back, there have been a lot of questions, but he asked what would Mr. Killian have to say to trigger accurate information to be forthcoming?
Right.
Is there anywhere in the record such an inquiry made during the course of the deposition?
If
you know, then please tell us. If not, well, we can hunt it. But that critical inquiry, at least.
No, he did not make that critical statement. Did he ask the concert representative, is Rush University Medical Center part of the PHCS network or part of the select provider network? He did not state that.
I'm not making an inquiry into what Mr. Killian said. I'm making an inquiry in the course of discovery, whether you or other counsel made an inquiry of when you were deposing the opposing party, what Mr. Killian would have had to say.
I don't recall. That would be in Mr. Antony's deposition, yeah, if it appears anywhere, and I'm not sure if we made that particular inquiry. You know, what would have been helpful here is if these phone calls had been recorded. I believe that's cheap and ubiquitous technology. Unfortunately, they didn't record these phone calls here. I don't know why. Perhaps for the same reason they didn't do SPDs or network directories.
The counsel, the object of evidence about where the phone calls were made to demonstrates that they were made to the pre-certification number and the customer service number, not the provider participation number.
I think Mr. Killian indicated that he did call the provider.
I'm not talking about what he testified to. I'm talking about what the record of the phone calls demonstrates.
Oh, we don't have a record of the phone call. It's only Mr. Killian's recollection years after
who
the fact.
Who did the operators who received the call work for? The network or...
I think they work for Concert. That's my impression, but I'm not sure. They may be employed by PHC.
But it's been represented to us that the provider participation calls go to some off-site set of operators, and so that's the factual dispute that we seem to be having some difficulty with here. Mr. Killian testified that he called the provider participation number, but the object of evidence seems to suggest that the call that he didn't do that he actually called the pre-certification number and the customer service number, which is a different bank of operators charged with a different set of responsibilities.
He testified that he called two numbers and they knew enough to talk about Rush St. Luke's. And then the second number they called, it sounded like they were right next to each other. The two numbers he called. And, you know, I think that statement has been made. These cards are a little confusing. There's an awful lot of numbers on them.
Do we have anything other than his testimony on this point? Do we have any call logs or...
No, that would be Concert's opportunity.
It's your burden. I keep coming back to that. This case was litigated very differently in the district court and litigated very differently before the panel than what we've got now.
Okay, I believe
it's your burden to demonstrate where he called.
Of course, if they're not keeping the recording and they're not keeping a log,
right,
it's very difficult for you to meet your burden on that point. And then looking at this card, because as I understand what opposing counsel said, you know, it was PHCS, and he's saying, you know, it's all on the Internet and everything. Of course, the www Internet address is not on the card either.
Right. And we have no idea.
So I'm just trying to figure out what else you could do in terms of creating a record. There was no record that was being made by them unless your guy took notes on the call he was making.
Which I don't think he did.
Well, did you seek discovery on any of this from Concert?
I'm sorry?
Did you seek discovery on this point from Concert? This is a critical point.
On the point as to what...
Give us your call logs.
I believe there were some types of logs, but they weren't very helpful. There were some notes in the file, but there was nothing in there that would indicate what exactly was said on these calls.
But you did ask. I mean, that's Judge Sykes's question. Did you request from Concert this kind of information?
I would have to take a look at our discovery requests. We did extensive discovery in this case, as I indicated, even though it's ostensibly an arbitrary and capricious standard of review. And in sum, I can tell you, I don't think we'd be here if they had followed the industry practice of sending
out
directories.
The case will be taken under advisement.
Thank you.